Mishnah missed a good job. Timing is everything.
Timing is everything.
In the first Chabura, so we laid the groundwork for exploring Hilchos Tefilas Kelim. We looked a lot at the Yisayistika question of what the Tefilas Kelim was Dari Sid Rabbanon, and also laid out a framework for thinking about the halachas of Tefilas Kelim, not only distinguishing between Tefilas Kelim and two other processes that sometimes overlap, Hagalah and Tefilah for Tuma, but also recognizing that the halachas of Tefilas Kelim are going to break into two big chunks. The second one is going to be how you do the open of Tefilas Kelim. The first one is whether or not a particular kli is chayiv or not. The common maisa and cheftza split. So we begin with that issue of which kelim are chayiv. And in terms of which kelim are chayiv, which was the opening of the Gemara and Ayin Hayim Beis and Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara laid out three conditions. Three conditions to that kli has to meet, or has to meet all three criteria in order to be chayiv in Tefilas Kelim. Now we're beginning with the first one, and that's the biggest one. That's the question of kli suda. The three conditions were function, material, and ownership history. We begin with the question of function. Gemara says, based on the context in which Tefilas Kelim was presented, the story of Melchemes Midyan, the klei seuda amur b'parsha. The Torah is talking about these metal kelim that were taken at war from the Midyanim, and they're specifically klei seuda. Klei seuda amur b'parsha. The Gemara says, if you get a you fit the other two conditions, but not this, you're not chayiv. You have a metal bike that you buy from an achri, so it is a kli mateches, and it's lakuach min an achri, but there's no chiyav tefilas kelim. You don't have to take your bike to the mikvah, even if it's titanium, or even if it's a stainless steel bike. No chiyav to take your stainless steel bike. You buy a metal car. Or you have metal shears that you use to cut paper. So no chiyuv to take that to mikvah. It has to be klei suda amur and b'parsha. Now, this is very important. A lot of very practical issues flow from this. We'll be talking about a lot of examples over the next little while. There are a lot of details that go into defining kli suda and figure out what's chayiv and what's patur because it's not a kli suda. We'll discuss a lot of cases, a lot of details, a lot of angles. Try to organize things in a certain different fashion. Today I want to talk about the issues that come up in terms of defining kli suda. A couple of dimensions to that. Maybe next time we'll talk about the interactions between the condition of kli suda and the other two conditions. That's loosely the divide between the first page, the Mar Makomos 2 and Mar Makomos 3. In thinking about the basic definition of kli suda, that itself, there are two major things to think about. One is the connection to the food, and the other one is the stage. So let's explain one by one. The connection to the food. A number of the Chachmei Ashkenaz, a number of the Ashkenazi Rishonim, make the point that part of the definition of Klei Suda has to be a Kli that has direct contact with food. Beis Yosef quotes a number of these Rishonim both here and at the end of the Siman, Hey Beis. Dr. Moshe quotes it. The earliest Rishon that I'm aware of who says it is Ar Zeruah. That goes to Ashri, quotes from the Ar Zeruah. The Beis Yosef quotes a Smak. He also quotes the Hagos Maimini Kosta, just for you to know who that is. Hagos Maimini is on the bottom of the Rambam. Hagos Maimini was a contemporary of the Rosh and the Mordechai. They were all Talmidim of the Rambam of Wittenberg in the 1300s. Hagos in general is a genre, a type of sefer, that was notes on the bottom of an earlier halacha sefer. In those notes, in those hagos, you would collect more recent psakim of the Ashkenazi Rishonim. So you have hagos on the Mordechai, you have hagos on the Smak. Most famously, there's hagos on the Shulchan Aruch, otherwise known as the Ramah. That's what he's doing. He's collecting psakim of the Ashkenazim. And then you have the hagos Maimoni, also collecting psakim of the Ashkenazi Rishonim. Along the topics of the Rambam, sometimes agreeing with the Rambam, sometimes disagreeing with the Rambam, sometimes specific issues the Rambam didn't really raise. Like here, the Rambam talks here in Parakut Zayin about Tfilas Kelim. So Hagos Maimon, he gives you many issues that the French and German Rishon raised that the Rambam doesn't necessarily take a stand on. There are two versions of the Hagos Maimon. That's important to know. There's the usual version that's printed in many Rambams, and then when they printed the Frankel Rambam, they uncovered a Ksav Yad, a different from Constantinople, from Istanbul, Ksav Yad of a different version of Hagos Maimi. Sometimes it's the same, sometimes it's very different. It's if you open a Frankel Rambam, it's printed in the back under the title Hagos Maimi Constantinople. In the new tours that you have, so they associate, they'll often call it Hagos Maimi Costa, for short. That's what, if you're looking for it, say Kos Hagos Maimi, then you're looking in the page Rambam. It's not there. That's the answer. Hagos Maimi Costa. You got to look in the back. So they all Hagos Ashri Kosa or Zarua, the Beis Yosef and the Darkei Moshe called the Hagos Maimi Costa, calling the Smak, the Rio of Korbel. These Ashkenazi Rishonim talk about the following case. It's a case that appears in Shulchan Aruch also. It's a stove grate. Like, you know, we have a stovetop. So you have the fire on the stovetop. The oven is the space into which you can put a pan, but you have the stovetop at the top. You can put pots on top of the fire. You need a grate in order to give some space. You need a grate on top of your stove to elevate your pot a half an inch above the fire. Otherwise, simple physics, the fire goes out because it's covered by the pot. It doesn't get any oxygen. So anytime you have a stovetop, as you mean, it's the actual fire, not glass or something, you have an actual gas stovetop, so you need to have some sort of grate that elevates the pot a little bit. You cannot cook in a pot on a stovetop without that grate. It is absolutely critical for making food. And that grate is made out of metal. Maybe I bought the whole house from an achri, together with the stove and the stovetop grates. Or maybe just went to the store and bought an oven with a stovetop and it has grates. So those grates are absolutely critical for making the food. Or do those grates have to go to mikvah? Rishonim talk about it. Again, these Rishonim all talk about it. The Ashkenaz Rishonim talk about it. The Shulchan Aruch talks about it here. It's a dalad. Tripods. Some talk about it as the Shach tells you. Beis Laman Aleph, Balash and Ashkenaz, it's Dreyfus. Okay?
Dry feet.
Right, exactly. Exactly. In the Romance languages, like French, it's going to be a tripod. Latin derived languages. In Germanic languages, it's going to be a Dreyfus. Either way, you have a tripod, a grate, a stovetop grate, so does it require tefillah? So these Rishon, these Chachmei Ashkenaz all say it does not. It does not. Why not? So this becomes a sort of a paradigm. You'll see that repeatedly over this part of Hilchos Tefillos Kelim. The Rishonim talk about like certain like specific cases, and those cases become paradigms, become examples of certain concepts. So this is our first paradigm case. This is the stove grate, the Dreyfus, the tripod. So the Rishonim explain there is no chiyuv tefillas kelim, even though this is absolutely true. You can't cook your food without this Dreyfus, but it does not touch the food that it is being used to prepare. The food is touching the pot. The food is not or should not be touching the grate. If it's touching the grate, it means it dripped out of the pot and you're not going to eat it. So since the grate does not touch the food, that's not called a kli suda. The pot, which touches the food, that's the kli suda. But the stovetop grate, the Dreyfus, doesn't touch the food, and therefore it is not a kli suda. That's aspect number one of what it means to be a kli suda is a kli that's being used in direct contact with the food, and that's what the Shulchan Aruch quotes here. He quotes from the Smak and Sif Dalad, a distinction between the grate on top of the stove versus the grate or the grill on top of a barbecue. The grate on top of the stove, is the rack on top of the stove, is just meant to touch pots. But the rack on top of a grill is meant to touch food. So the rack on top of the grill, the rack on top of the barbecue, that's the kli suda. You put the meat, you put the fish, you put the onions, whatever it is, directly on the grill on top of the barbecue. So that taka is chayiv and tefillah. But that second case, the Shach once again helpfully tells you, in German or Yiddish, it's called a roist. A roast, okay. Sometimes the food, the grate that you roast meat on, that's chayiv and tefillah, because it has direct contact with the food. But the grate that's on top of your, the grill, the grate, excuse me, that's on top of your stove, that doesn't touch the food, shouldn't touch the food, just touches the pot, so that's not chayiv and tefillah. That's rule number one. And kli suda, is kli suda means there's direct contact between the kli and the food. Why should that be true? Chachmei Ashkenaz just say it. The grate top of the stove isn't chayiv. That's not kli suda. Why? So the Gra has a fantastic diuk, fascinating diuk. The Gra says this mamish goes back to the psukim. The Gra says the truth is, without this you can't understand the Gemara. And he says it's a Rashba, not a Rashba chidushim on Avodah Zarah. The Rashba wrote a sefer, halacha sefer, on much of what we call Yeridaya. On the halachas of Kashrus, on the halachas of Nida, several other areas of halacha, called the Torah Sabayis. And much of the Torah in the first half of Yeridaya is based on the Rashba's Torah Sabayis. Tremendous amount of halachas Kashrus. He has less than a page about Tefillas Kehillim, as far as I can tell. Just gets sort of stuck in here. There's a lot to say about Kasher and Kehillim, what becomes Simen Kuf Chaf Aleph, Hagala and Libun. There's a little bit about Tefillas Kehillim. In that little bit, the Gra says, watch that line. The way the Rashba says over Gemara is gorgeous. We started by saying that the Gemara and Avodah Zarah, where it all begins, Avodah Zarah and Haman Beis, says three conditions, all based on the case, the original case of Klei Midyan. Rule number one, the function has to be Klei Suda. Why? Because Klei Suda Amurim B'Parsha. Where did you see that Klei Suda Amurim B'Parsha? The Torah didn't say what sort of gold, silver, or copper can. We just said, you have these gold, silver, copper, iron, tin, lead, kalim, gotta take them to mikvah. So where do you see anything about klei suda? Maybe it means gold jewelry. Where the Gemara was so convinced that the Chumash is only talking about klei suda. Ayin hey, bits. Zuzah disarbal of the scissors, that's not included. Rav Nachman explains, Klei Se'udah Murim B'Parsha. Where do you see it? So Rashi explains, Ta'aksiv kol damash yovo be'esh. The Torah doesn't just say that it's metal kalim as opposed to wood or cloth. The Torah also says it's metal kalim that are potentially ba be'esh. What does that mean? Ein derech l'shtamash le'ehur. You don't put your earrings or necklaces on the fire. Maybe you make them in fire, but you don't use them in fire. Which metal kalim are you using in fire? So Rashi says, things that you're using to make food. That's how Rashi explains it. And the Hanok Sivatar Tvila. But the scissors that you use to cut paper, that you use to trim your bush, shears that you use to trim your bushes, you don't use them in fire. That's what Rashi says. The Gra here, the Gra on this din, on Sif Dalet, Shulchan Aruch Sif Dalet, so the Gra is Sif Kat and Yud, the Gra is identified by the bracketed letters. So he says, look in the Rashba, in the Torah Sabayis, he adds a Kneich. So it's not just that you put pots on the fire to cook with, is that you kasher, means things that require libun. That's what the Gra quotes here. The Rashi said, "Oh, it's only those things which require libun." Ezeh davar sheba be'esh tzarich lachshir be'esh zeh klei suuda sheboleya. You don't have to kasher your earrings or your necklaces or your garden shears. They're not boleya. It's not an issue. Talk about things that require, potentially require hechsher. So the Gra says, that's what the Rashi says. The Gra says, oh. So the only, in other words, it's things that are in a position to be boleya tam from the food. So he says, when you learn bas v'chalav, you learn that it is true that flavor can jump from the food into the kli, or from a kli into other food. But flavor doesn't jump from kli to kli. Eina balua yotze b'la rotev. If you have a kli that's already milchik or fleishik or treif or whatever it is, that's hot, but the outside of the pan is touching another pan, or you have a clean, dry, but hot pan, and you put a fork in it, but everything's clean and dry, if there's no medium, there's no liquid, there's no food, there's no grease between the two kalim, eina balua yotze b'la rotev, then flavor is not going to jump from kli to kli. That's why if you want to heat kosher food in a treif oven, you double wrap it. Because no flavor is going to go from one layer of aluminum foil to the next. You've created your kli to kli, no conductivity. So the Gra says, aha! So that's why if there's no contact, there's no tefillah. Because klei su'uda, more of a parsha, klei su'uda means it's involved with food in a way that could potentially generate a need for hechsher. So post can point that. It doesn't have to be something that's used with hot food, but it has to be something that's used in direct contact with food. So this idea that the Chachmei Ashkenaz say, there was a ruah and the smak, quoted by the Hagalas Ashri and others, that the rule number one, aspect number one of Kli Se'uda is that to be something which is in direct contact with food. So the Gra says, yeah, look in the Rashba, that goes, takes you back to the Psukim. The whole idea of Kli Se'uda Murba Parsha is that it's the sort of thing that interacts enough with food that in theory you could need kashering. That means direct contact. Direct contact. Strictly speaking, just to retranslate that, transpose that, oven grates don't, strictly speaking, stovetop grates don't, strictly speaking, need kashering. Now, you're thinking, but in my Pesach kitchen, it's covered with foil. So the answer is, yeah. So why we do that? Because what if the pot bubbles over? If the pot bubbles over, and then you have some liquid seeping down the side of the pot, getting in between the pot and the grate. So then maybe in theory at that moment, there's some flavor jumping from chametz dikah grate to kashel pesach pot. So that's why, to be extra careful, we typically do something with the grates also. But as a general rule, the way grates are supposed to be used, there's no blia, and therefore there is no need for tefillah. Let's unpack, this is them, so aspect number one of klei se'uda is you need to have sufficiently strong connection between the klei and the food, meaning direct contact between the klei and the food. The paradigm case is the oven grate. The oven grate is potter, but the grill grate that you directly put food on, that's chayv, yeah.
Just to say that a little differently, is that mean that it's the intended purpose is supposed to be that it's touching food? Because otherwise you could say that the grace should also require based on...
Good. So another, that's a very good point. It's when the intended purpose, the function of the kli is meant to involve contact, right? As opposed to grates which may accidentally end up contacting food, but that's not what you intended. And here's another example of something, a kli that is potter, because it doesn't need to touch food in the course of its function, though sometimes it accidentally does, is a can opener. Can openers do not need tefillos kalim. It's more or less a befei shoshach at the end of sif kat and yud aleph, the makdach. He's talking about something used to puncture a hole in a wine barrel, but it's more or less the same. Shach is quite convinced it does not require Tvi'as Kalim, or Tzvi Cohen, in a sefer on Hetuchot Tvi'as Kalim entitled Tvi'as Kalim. So he points out in talking about the can opener, he says, look at the Shach. Basically the same thing, right? So when you use a can opener, again, the can opener is absolutely critical in order to eat the food. You have food in a can, there's almost no way to get at that food without the can opener. It is critical for eating the food. However, its critical function, it doesn't involve contact with the food. It's, you're cutting through the can. Sometimes the food may splash, okay, you know, liquid may be pretty close to the top, but that's entirely incidental to the function of the can opener. A word, by the way, just about the sefer. This is a Rav Tzvi Cohen, a Hafla Deket Talmud Chacham, lives in Bnei Brak. I believe he is still alive. I hope. He has written.
Yeah? Related to Rebbe?
Not as far, other than through Aaron HaKohen, not as far as I know. I would love to relate to him. Yeah, fantastic Talmud Chacham. And look at the end paper of his Svarim, tends to be a picture of all the Svarim that he's published. They all have very direct titles. Tfilas Kalim, Hadalas Kalim, Tzitzis, Sfiras HaOmer, Bin Pesach L'Shavuos, Chanukah, Pesach Shechal B'Shavuos, and on and on and on and on. His Svarim are, wow, each one is a tour de force. Incredibly organized and stunningly footnoted. He gives you very thorough Rishonim, Achronim, organized, fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. I neglected to mention before the year started, I don't know if they're in print. If they are, he unlike the Chalkas B'Yam is great, and he goes like Mishnah Berurah style, Al Seder Shulchan Aruch. The Tfilas Kalim, like I think all of Tzvi Cohen's farm, he digests everything and then reorganizes everything. Like he has reorganized all of the Tfilas Kalim into his categories. Which Kalim are what types of Kalim? Who? How are your Konev? Before tefillah, that very, 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 very mesudar. And then he has Perek Yud Aleph, is several hundred kalim organized alphabetically. Fascinating mind. I would love to talk to him and learn. It'll be a treat. So he is there, Tzvi Cohen. He points out, he talks about, I think it's in Perek Yud Aleph, and he gets up to Potchan, can openers. He says, well, look at the Shach, and this is Perek Yud Aleph. That about the barrel opener, same idea. It does not require to be a kalim. It is necessary to eat the food, but it's another example of the stovetop grate concept. There is here. Let's talk about though a third example, in addition to stovetop grates and can openers. A third example that gets a little stickier is liners. I have a glass tray for serving cookies. Okay, requires tefillas kalim. If you bought it from it, it's glass. That's a kli suda. If you buy it from an acher, it requires tefillas kalim. Here's what I'll do. I'll only use it with a napkin. I have a glass tray, but I'll put down a napkin or a cloth doily. I'll put the cookies on that. Okay, that's not, there you go, $6. It's not touching the food. Is that legitimate? Or let's say I have a metal, I forget what you call them, ice bucket, or glass ice bucket. Okay, it's holding the glass. You're using it to serve ice. So I'll be pashtus, that's a kli suda. Well, I'll put in a plastic bag as a liner. Does that solve your problem? Now he doesn't need tefillah. If I'm using it, is that no longer tashmir suda because I put in a plastic liner? Or let's say you have a silver challah bowl or challah dish. Some people like to always put down a doily. That's their style. So does that mean now it's not chayav and tefillah? Well, let me give you a different example. It's going out of style, but for the first, I think, six decades or so of the state of Israel, milk was almost invariably sold in bags. Right? You got the sealed plastic bags. And you had to own one of those pitchers. Sometimes you had the fancy pitcher that had the built-in slicer to cut a hole, or else you had to have your own scissors or knife. You had to, the whole art to how to cut the the right angle, the right size hole in the milk bag, and you have it in the container. And that was an efficient way of selling milk. For a very long time in the state of Israel, they were trying to avoid, use plastic instead of paper for a variety of practical reasons. Instead of selling milk in paper cartons, the way we do in America, they sold the milk in plastic bags. And you could minimize the amount of plastic if you have a sturdy pitcher. So you just have a plastic bag, cut the bag, put it in the pitcher, and you're good to go. So Yves T. Cohen discusses, so does your pitcher, obviously the plastic bag doesn't need tefillah, does your pitcher require a tefillah? So I would say, well, of course the pitcher doesn't require a tefillah, it's plastic. So apparently in the old days, the pitcher was metal. You had a metal pitcher, and you would buy plastic bags of milk and put them in the metal pitcher. The shaila is, that's your milk pitcher. So does the metal pitcher require tefillah or not? And it's basically holding milk in a bag, in the metal pitcher. Or you have your glass tray with a napkin and cookies on top. You have your ice bucket with a plastic bag liner in it and ice. So do liner is do you say that that's like it's like the pot in between the food and the grate? And man, that's just a liner. It's just tefillah. It's tefillah to the ice bucket. It's tefillah to the tray. It's tefillah to the pitcher. See, he quotes from Shlomo Zalman. He quotes, if you want to take a look, Perek Aleph, Hara Zayin. He quotes, he discusses Shlomo Zalman Arbach, Rav Shin Zayin Arbach, who wanted mechalek between the tray and the bucket on the one hand, and the pitcher on the other hand. It said, do you say the liner just tefillah to the pan or not? Is it depends. Says the milk pad pitcher he thought was potter. Why? Because you carry that liner isn't just a mere liner. You often transport the milk just with the bag. As a matter of fact, that's how you buy in the store. You buy in the store in the bag, you put in the fridge in the bag, and then when you're ready to use it, then you put in the pitcher and you cut open the bag and you start using it. So that bag has an independent identity. It's not merely batil, tafil, to the pitcher. So that's like the pot. That's like you have the food in the pot, and the pot is on the grate. So he thought that, Rishon Zalman thought that the pitcher is is potter from tefillah, like the grates on the stovetop. But on the other hand, to stick a bag as a liner in the ice bucket, or to put a cloth or a napkin on top of the tray, a glass tray, in between the tray and the cookies, you don't actually carry the cookies around just with a napkin. You don't usually carry you just put a bag as a liner in the ice bucket. You don't carry the ice in the bag. The bag is only there as a liner to the bucket. The napkin is only there as a liner to the tray. So at that point, you would say that it's tefillah to the tray, tefillah to the ice bucket, and the ice bucket and the tray do require tefillah's kelim. Question?
Would we say the same thing in terms of levon, with the liner that the tray would need?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So he talks about that a little bit. So it's not sure necessarily, it would not necessarily be the same when it comes to kosher. He says, according to the Gra, hooray, that's the whole Makar Dvarim. So the answer, I think, is, he goes to Shlomo Zalman along these lines. So it's also true that you need to tovel a glass fruit bowl, even though it's only tashmishal adetzone. You don't put any hot food in the fruit bowl, so there's no bliya there either. So the answer is we're not saying there's an absolute equality, absolute equation between kashering and tovling. But what we're saying is that there's a concept that is teaching you. The concept is that you need to have the type of close contact between, the same type of close contact between food and the same adjacency that you have between food and a kli that can sometimes lead to kashering, the type of adjacency that sometimes that will lead to tefillah. Yeah, the details is definitely not all the same. But that's true anyways in terms of tashmishah b'tzon. Okay, so that was one major issue in terms of the definition of kli se'uda is the connection to the food. You have to have direct contact. The other major issue is a question of what type of interaction. Okay, it's touching the food, and what's it doing to the food? What's it doing to the food? So it's clear in Rishonim that Klei Suda doesn't only mean kalim with which you eat. Klei Suda literally sounds like we're talking about dining room equipment. Things that you have at the Suda. Your knife, your fork, your glass. Things that kalim that you eat with. So it's clear in Rishonim that it's not only kalim that you eat with, it's also kalim that you prepare food with. For instance, this whole discussion about the oven grates. There's discussion about a shechita knife that we'll get to soon. It's clear in Rishonim that pots and pans also require tefillas kalim. Where things get a little unclear is how about other types of functions? One example is, let's say it's neither a dining room kli nor a kitchen kli. It's neither used for eating the food, nor is used for preparing the food, it's used for storing the food. It's a pantry kli. It's just a storage container. It's not the sort of, you have a glass Tupperware. You know, the glass Tupperware is with the rubber tops. They're not used for making food, and they're not used for reheating food, and they're not usually used for eating food either. You have some sort of like large glass container that you keep your cereal in. You don't eat the cereal in it. You don't make the cereal in it. It's used only for storage. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger actually talks about that. It's the first big Rabbi Akiva Eiger in the Siman, Sif Aleph, Dibra Mascho, Vechei Noagim. He quotes a discussion among earlier Achronim about that, about these big, big vats. Big, big vats. They're used for storing wine. So back and forth. Discussion earlier, Achron about it. Rabbi Akiva Eiger assumes that storage kalim also, he seems to imply that storage kalim also require tevilas kalim. We're going to get to it in the next chabur later this week. We showed him talk about Tosis, right? Talks about barrels, wooden barrels with metal bindings. So apparently the assumption is that barrels, if they were fully metal barrels, of course they would be chayv. What do you mean? That's just a barrel. You're not drinking out of the barrel. So it sounds from that as well, that store from that Tosis, and all those Rishonim who discuss the chavya shal etz chashuv shal barzel, often it sounds like storage, like Rabbi Akiva Eiger's assumption. You could push back, because it could be those who are talking about barrels that aren't just used for storing the wine, but for preparing the wine. Barrels in which you ferment wine, so that's like a pot. You're actually making, you're preparing the food. So it's not so clear that that's a raya. That's why the Rabbi Eiger stresses, chavios are used only l'kiyum hayayim. It's already made, now you're just going to store it. But we do generally assume that storage kalim also require tefillah. Here's another aspect of the second issue, though. Like, what exactly is your kli? Good, your kli is touching the food. What's it doing to the food? And they said, okay, eating the food, making the food, storing the food. But then you have another paradigm case. Our second paradigm case that the Mordechai raises is a shechita knife. Shechita knife. Shechita knife. Offhand, shechita knife. You can't have meat. A Jew can't eat meat without a shechita knife. So that sounds like a pretty critical type of... it's as important as your pot. It's as important as your grill. You can't eat meat without a shechita knife. And yet, the Mordechai has a diuk from a Gemara in Chum Daf Ches Amud Beis that a shechita knife is potter mitzvila. The Gemara there is Baram Ches Amud Taf Ches Amud Beis. You may have seen that Gemara. Where it talks about the first two prakim of Chulin by Lars of Hilcha Shechita. The other Gemara says, let's say you have a Sakash al Avodah Zarah. Sakash al Avodah Zarah, so it might be Asir Bahana. What if I shechted with it? Is it meat kosher? So the Gemara says, forget about the fact that the Davar Shal Avodah Zarah, it was also used, obviously, previously for treif for food. So there's also, aside from the Hana from Divrei Avodah Zarah, isn't there a problem of of trade for bleus, of trade for grease, on the surface of the knife. So in terms of that issue, the Gemara has two solutions. Solution number one, who says they use the knife, who says the Nachrim, or Rachman al-San, the Jewish Ovid Devozar, maybe they use the knife for cutting other things. Maybe they use it to clip their Asherah tree. There's no trade for bleus there. Okay, number one. Number two, the Gemara says, and maybe in a Hanami, you got it from the Nachri, and it was full of trade for bleus, but you kashered it. Libna, you're malaving it. So you took care of any kashrus issues. The Gemara says, Libun doesn't take care of Avodah Zarah issues. If it's Asher Bahanok, it's the Cheptashal Avodah Zarah, kashering isn't going to matter. If it's just a question of trade for bleus, kashering solves the problem. Says the Mordechai, excuse me, you forgot to mention Tevila. You got it from the Nachri, the Ovid Avodah Zarah. What about Tevila? You're talking about the steps that are necessary to prepare the kli for Jewish use. You mentioned Libun, you didn't mention Tevila. So the Mordechai finds it to be an incredibly compelling diuk. He says, Mikan that a sagan shoshchita does need Tevila. Okay? One could have imagined saying, that's not the Gemara's context. Gemara's context was we're raising the issue of trade for flavor. Okay. But the Baruch says, we should also raise the issue of Tevila's kail. We didn't raise that issue. Oh my, he doesn't need it. He says, after all, our Gemara here in the bottom of Ein Heim based on Avodah Zarah, we keep talking about kashering and tovling. Kashering and tovling. Why did the Gemara say it over there? Lamai, you don't need Tevila. And for the Mordechai, no. He says, it's true that you can't eat meat without a shechita knife. But on the other hand, a shechita knife is necessary, but it's not sufficient. By the time the shechita knife is done, it doesn't give you prepared food. It's a necessary preliminary step. Yes, it's used for preparing food, but it's at an early step when the food is still inedible. And let's just explain that a little bit. What do you mean? A frying pan also. I have raw chicken. I put it in the frying pan. I have raw chicken. I put it in my pot to make chicken soup. That's the way cooking works. I have that the Shulchan Aruch quoted from the Chachmei Ashkenaz that the barbary, the grill on my the grate on my grill is chayiv in tefillah. Why? But I put raw fish on it. I put raw meat on it. So the answer is that's very different than Sakhna Shlita. Why? It's true that you put raw meat on the grill.
What comes out of that?
But by the time the grill is done, the meat is ready. Right. So it's true. The grill, it comes in contact with raw meat. It also comes in contact through its function with edible meat. Masha Enokain, a shechita knife, does not come in contact with edible meat even when it's done. I mean, when it first touches the animal, it's not even shachat. When by the time you're done, a split second later, the animal is shachat, but still not edible. You're not eating the raw meat. You're going to salt it, you're going to cook it, a lot's going to happen. There's a couple of hours of work between the end of the shechita and the meat being on your plate. So that's the yisod of the Mordechai. Again, that's our second paradigm case. Our first paradigm case was the stovetop grate as opposed to the grill grate. And the second paradigm case is the sakin shel shechita. Sakin shel shechita. And there are many examples of this. Anything, you have a the bowl, you have a KitchenAid they use for mixing. Or so you have the bowl and you have the wands. They're used with raw dough. Once they're done, it's no longer raw flour, but it's still raw dough. Many people eat cookie dough, so maybe that's not such a good example. But let's say you have things that are only used for making bread dough. People don't eat bread dough. Generally, again, Mordechai's line is, people generally don't eat raw meat. People generally don't eat bread dough. Or you have kale that are used for dealing with matzah dough. And you have rollers, or you have the radlers that are used to puncture.
So, luchora,
you don't need to tov of it. Luchora, that's what it sounds like. Right? Same as sakin shal shechita. Or or a meat tenderizer. You have a metal mallet that you use to pound raw meat or raw chicken to soften it, certain types of kitchens. Something you would want to use to process the raw meat or raw chicken in advance of making it edible. While it's still raw, you tenderize it with a mallet. So let's say you have a metal mallet, metal meat tenderizer. So that all sounds like Sakhan Shal Shchita. So what's Takan Adin of Sakhan Shal Shchita? So the Mordechai said, Potter, I have a diak from Gemara and Chulin, Davches, Sakhan Shal Shchita does not require Tevila. The Hagos Ashri also quotes that. The Beis Yosef, the end of Siman, points out Hagos Ashri quotes it here, Parakeh Siman Lamed Hey. He talks about the Barzel Shakofen Al Hamatzos. That sounds like something that you're. It sounds like something that you're rolling out the matzahs with. Potter. Darkei Moshe quotes Rabbeinu Yonah, not Rabbeinu Yonah the Sfardi, who wrote on brachas. Rabbeinu Yonah, who lived in the 1200s, a contemporary of the Ramban. They were together Rabbeim of the Rajba. We mean Rabbeinu Yonah the Ashkenazi, who wrote a sefer called Iser V'Heter, who lived in the late 1300s, or I think in the 1400s, not long before the Rambam. The Rabbein Yonah, and the Ihagos Ashri, the Mordechai, they all accept this diuk. That Sakhan Shal Shchita doesn't require Tvihos Kalim, that the metal, the iron tools used to deal with the matzah dough don't require Tvihos Kalim, but the Darkei Moshe, Ramon Darkei Moshe says, but there were other Ashkenaz Rishon who disagree. The Maharash, the Tashbetz of the Sephardi. And again, you got to look inside Tashbetz to see where the logic is, but the Mordechai's diuk, there's room to disagree. The Mordechai's diuk, okay. The Gemara didn't mention tefillah. Does that therefore prove about those that there's no need to tefillah? No, maybe not. So whether this is true, a kli that's used directly with food, but at a very early stage of preparation while the food is still raw, so that's the machlokus arishon. Is it chayim and tefillah? Is it not chayim and tefillah? The sakhan shel shchita. Is it chayiv or not? The radlers for the matzah dough, are they chayiv or not? Machlokas harishon. What's the din? Look in Shulchan Aruch. Sif, hey. So, Mechaber says, well, sakhan shel shchita, Rama adds, or you have a knife that's used for skinning the animal, for removing the skin from the body of the animal. Also, critical in order to eat, but used at a very early stage. Some say that doesn't require tefillah. That's a little bit hesitant. I mean, that's a serious group of Rishonim, Hagos Ashri and the Mordechai, and the Issa V'Heter. But as Rama goes on to say, the Yesh Holkin, there are those Marash and Tashbetz think it's Chayim. So the Rama writes here what he writes in the Darkei Moshe as well. Tovu, tovu, bo bracha. Hedge your bets. Tovel, no bracha. Tovel, misafik, but no bracha, also misafik. Tosarei raises that on Ayin Beis in other contexts of safik bracha, safik tefillah. So that's what Ramah says over here. Tovel without a bracha. The Shach points out that the Ramah then says something very strange. So then he talks about the other case. Habarzim shemesak mehama matzos, ein trichin tefillah. Or the kisa shakofen al apasla afosa. The radlers for the matzah don't need tefillah. A lid of a pot does require tefillah. Okay, a lid of a pot that's like the pot itself. It's being used with food that ultimately, by the time you're done, is fully cooked. And by the way, the gra here follows up on the point you made earlier. Is that yeah, just like the lid of a pot, it needs to be kashered if the food is trade, because the fact that the steam touches the lid is considered contact with the food. It's also considered contact with the food from a tefillah perspective. Good. Okay. But what you use to roll out the matzahs does not require tefillah. So Shach says, excuse me? Steer the Ramah. You just told me you're not sure about the Sakhan Shel Shchita. Tovel b'lo bracha. And then you nonchalantly say, but don't tovel the radlers. That's a steer. The Shach has an interesting yishuv Yeah, the shachar is an interesting yishuv. That'll maybe bring us to our last topic for today. The shach says, not everyone agrees. The shach writes as if cutting it out. The taz disagrees, but the shach nekudas hakesef on the side, which is the shach's comments on the taz, he reiterates the shita and says v'chein aminik. He says, what's the difference between a shchita knife and a matzah roller, the matzah puncturer? If your issue is that the function isn't such a kli seuda, because the function is at a very preliminary stage when the food is still raw, the shach says, what's the difference between sakan shel shchita versus a matzah puncturer? What else can you do with a matzah puncturer other than puncture matzah dough?
Not much.
Probably nothing. It's a pretty dedicated tool. Very specific. What else can you do with a shchita knife besides shacht?
Put your meat.
Cut anything. I mean, you probably wouldn't want to. Shochtim tend to be very protective of the shchita knives for a good reason. But it will make quick work of your tomatoes and peppers for Israeli salad. You can slice things very well with the shchita knife. You probably aren't going to, but it can be used for other things also. It's not miyuchad. It's not designed only for preliminary stages. You intend to use it for preliminary stages. It could be used for something else. So the shach says, maybe that's the difference. Maybe the Rama is saying, well, the Barzalim, this is the shach says, the Barzalim can't be used for anything else. There's nothing else you can use them for. So that's mamish super preliminary. So then we follow the Mordechai absolutely. Then we say it does not require tefillah. But a case like Sakan Shel Shchita, where you intend to use it only for early stages, but it could be used for other things also. At that point already, we are more concerned about the Shita, the Tashbetz, and the Maharash. The Sakhan Shechita is Chayiv. At that point, we already say, you should Tovel without a Bracha. That's the way the Shach makes sense of this. So again, so far we discussed the two major issues in the Kalei Seuda. One is how connected is the Kli to the food? What does that mean about how connected it is to the food? And the other is what exactly is the Kli doing to the food? In terms of connection to the food, we said you have to have direct contact. And we discussed Rav Shlomo Zalman's chiluk between the milk container being a hefsek, like the pot being a hefsek, as opposed to the liner on the tray not being a hefsek. The other major issue was the question what is the kli doing to the food? Either you're eating the food with it, or you're preparing the food with it. Kiveg has a discussion, Achronim, even if you're just using it to store the food. And finally, Machlokas Harishonim, about what if you're using it to prepare the food, but not to get the food to the finish line. To move this food one step closer to edibility. But it's still an edible, it's still a preliminary step. So that's the Machlokas Harishonim, and a discussion how we pass them.